This episode is brought to you by Cart Driver, Denver's home for wood-fired pizzas, fresh oysters, seasonal market plates, cocktails, and conversation.
This week on Meet and Three, meet four of our HRN Hall of Fame inductees. These prolific individuals are writers who have changed the way we talk about food. We'll take a look at the journeys that shaped their literary voices.
I was heading off into the unknown to spend my junior year of college in Paris.
We'll explore the culinary landscape they work within.
You know, it was that whole self-made American idea that you can just kind of create a new world from scratch, including a new way of eating.
And look at the transformative effect that their work has on what we eat and where it comes from.
It gets down to management deciding that humane handling is important. You've got to have management that cares. And if management doesn't care, then you're going to have a bunch of bad stuff.
You can learn more about HRN's 10th anniversary Hall of Fame at heritageradionetwork.org/Hall of Fame. And don't forget to subscribe to Meet and Three wherever you listen to podcasts. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E.
Hi, I'm Allie Kane. Welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building and growing consumer brands. When we launched a line of fresh sauces, I knew we were jumping into something crazy. Haven's Kitchen is a cooking school, cafe, and event space. A product that people buy in grocery stores is an entirely new business, and I had a lot to learn. So in my efforts to get myself educated, I started meeting everyone I know and respect who could advise me on production and distribution, sales and legal, PR, and social media. Then I started having those conversations here, as a podcast, so that other entrepreneurs can learn from them as well. This is the story of Haven's Kitchen Sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand, because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Emily Schilt, founder of Pop-Up Grocer, a traveling pop-up grocery store showcasing hundreds of products from the most innovative and exciting natural food brands today. With over 10 years of experience in marketing, Emily has helped some of the best brands you'll find in the market, helping with messaging and architecture, content strategy, production, influencer programs, and ad campaigns. A true brand lover, which is like my favorite part. Last year, Emily decided to create a physical space that could connect consumers with everything she loves. And I think she did it so super awesomely smart that I'm so happy to have you here today. Welcome, Emily.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So before we get into all of the pug-related things and all of your thoughts on brand, which I'm really excited about, tell me, because I remember, like, people who listen to this know that I have, like, a visceral response to Lucky Charms, like, or Barbie. Like, there are things that I, you know, Josie and the Pussycats. Like, I have things that, like, really resonate with me from my childhood. I was always into food, but I was also really into the way that a certain, like, I didn't want a Cindy doll. I wanted a Barbie doll, you know? And so I guess my question for you is, like, were you always, like, a brand person? Were you always a food person? Like, when did you start thinking about this stuff? Do you remember being little?
Yeah. I guess I have always been a brand person. I used to beg to wash the dishes because I would like to tell the story of the Dawn dish detergent.
Yes. Well,
as
then
I
you
was
were
doing
probably
it.
A brand.
So unfortunately, right. At my heart, I'm an advertiser.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And so when you would do the dishes, you'd be like, my dishes are sparkling clean.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Look what Dawn does compared to the competitive brand. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so where did you grow up?
I grew up in Maryland, just outside of Baltimore. Yeah.
And did you, like, were you like a theatrical kid, or were you extroverted? Were you introverted? Like, what was your vibe?
Was I theatrical? Theatrical is one word for it. early on, like elementary school, grade school, I was Probably a little bit of a kiss ass. Like, I was a goody two shoes. Yeah. I got all the gold stars.
You were like the lead in all the skits.
Yeah. I got all A's. And then I think I learned somewhere that that wasn't that fun.
Right.
So I switched things up for a while in my high school years.
Okay.
And then somewhere, we don't need to get into that. And then somewhere along that path, learned that wasn't the way either. And
right.
Morphed into the responsible, tax-paying adult that I am today.
And what did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh, God. Nothing close to what I...
Well, there is no, pop-up grocer founder.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a lawyer, so I had somewhat of a conservative, traditional... a career model, but then my mom was an acupuncturist.
Oh.
So I also had a very alternative, non-traditional role model too.
That's kind of cool.
So, but both entrepreneurs, but I mean, both worked for themselves and ran their own businesses.
That tends to be, there's some statistic, sure about, because you see a certain lifestyle and you see sort of, there is an advantage. There's challenges and it's scary, but there is something where you don't have to say yes to someone who you fundamentally hate,
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, my dad doesn't have 100% of the best clients.
Right.
But no, it is interesting that I picked that path because you are privy to the hardships of it, and the instability and...
Yeah.
That certainly was a running theme of my childhood.
Right.
But I guess maybe that's all I knew. So
right. When it's full, it's really full. And when it's empty, it's a little scary.
Yeah. And maybe I also came to know that that's the constant though.
Yes.
Is that, there are highs and there are lows.
Yeah.
So I knew that going into my own entrepreneurship.
That's a good... It's because I feel like a lot of the founders in here say that their goal with themselves, and I find myself saying it too, is not to ride, get happy with the highs, but don't ride them too hard. And certainly don't take the lows as badly as you do at the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had days where I've gotten under the covers and I haven't had one of those in a while.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, when you're flush with cash, you're like, ooh, new dress. Mama's going to get herself some new shoes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Right.
No, Mama's going to put that in a savings account.
I know. Whenever we get a new account, my kids are like, so are you going shopping? I'm like, oh no,
no.
I'm investing in merchandising. Right. Would you like to talk about what demos are?
Yeah.
Well, so did you know a little bit, in college, did you know you wanted to end up working for yourself? Or did you think at that point you were doing marketing? Or what did you go in to study?
In college, I went to a liberal arts school, so I got a really well-rounded education.
What was your major?
I did study business.
Uh-huh.
Though I nearly failed economics.
I failed economics. Wait,
Have you heard me on economics?
No, you know who didn't fail economics? Someone who was like, I loved freshman year. Someone on this podcast, because I think I say it almost every time on the podcast that I failed Econ 101.
Yeah.
Not my own fault. It's kind of mostly.
Oh, it's definitely the teacher's fault.
For sure the teacher, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And the TA.
Yeah.
I had a TA who only wore green.
Oh yeah. Nobody can thrive in an all green environment.
He was in some cult. And I was I couldn't get over it.
Yeah.
I was why can't you just throw in some white? Okay, so you had, you majored in business?
I did, yeah.
Even without econ. You don't need econ for business.
Yeah, no. Right. No, I think the most significant experience I had in college related to what I do now would probably be my internships.
Right.
I worked for a music organization that provided services to musicians in the city of Memphis.
Oh, wow.
And helped those musicians with their social media presence.
Ah,
so that's how I got my marketing start, was helping them build, a Twitter audience that would then show up to their shows. And that was so rewarding for me to watch their audience go from 3 to 20 or
whatever.
And
how did you know how to do that?
I was young, so that's the thing that they give you when you're young, and social media was this new sparkly tool.
Right.
So it's figure it out. Help these guys figure it out.
So cool.
And so, we learned it together.
And so were you sort of okay, this is something I'm interested in, and then after college, you decided to go into that world?
Yeah, I think I was interested in it because I had ownership of it, which mm-hmm. is unique when you're that young
yeah.
to be given that yeah. sense of responsibility and yep. have control over something.
Yeah.
So that really excited and motivated me, and that's when I was like, all right, I got to get out of Memphis, go to right. a big city and pursue this.
So you moved from college to Memphis?
I moved from college in Memphis to Boston, and
got
then Boston is where I was hired by a tiny little Greek yogurt company called Chobani.
I didn't know that that's where you were.
Yeah, yeah. So at the time, they were maybe $100 million company.
Right. That's still kind of
not
big.
Even. I mean, I had to explain to right. people in every conversation what Greek yogurt was.
Right.
So
wow.
that's how different the market was at that
wow.
time. Yeah, they hired me. I was one of the first employees outside of the manufacturing workers.
Wow.
And yeah, I worked there for 4 years.
To do social?
Yeah, it was sort of an everything.
Right.
Comms, green, throw them in
right.
Person.
Oh, that's amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And then when did you leave Chobani to then go sort of freelance, or did you go to something in between? Or
yeah, I mean, I left, and my time there, my job was my life. So
yeah.
I had no idea what I was going to do next. So I just went on vacation.
Right.
And while I was on vacation, a couple people reached out to me for freelance projects.
Yep.
And
that's how
here I am 5-6 years later.
And so, yeah, because when we first met, I don't even remember who introduced us, but they were like, you have to meet this person. Because I think I'm literally going back up to the bio, like messaging, architecture, content strategy, production, influencers, and ads. Like, they're all very different things. You could be good at one of those things and still have an agency, you know?
Yeah.
But now I guess everyone's trying to be full service and, like, trying to paint the whole picture together.
Yeah. It's the term has been overused, so it sounds a little gimmicky now, but I guess I would connect all of those dots by saying I'm a storyteller.
Like, right.
I really like getting to the heart of what's compelling about a product, a brand, a person, and telling that across, applying that across
right.
channels.
And I think part of, you know, at least in our case, like, we know our story pretty well. Like, we actually, I think, know ourselves very well. I think our biggest challenge has been getting that story out in a clear, consistent way across the different channels
yeah.
and getting people to actually be interested in, like, hearing it or
yeah.
reading it or anything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of connecting those dots, I think. I think people try to skip this part,
mm-hmm.
you know, and go straight to, like, everyone should buy our product.
Right.
But they don't have the why.
Yeah.
And then there are a lot of people that have the why. We just are tripping over ourselves because
yep.
we don't have the, like, the savvy second part.
Yeah. No, you nailed it. That's, like, those are the two ends of the spectrum, I would say, that I see in my consulting practice.
Right.
Yeah.
Which leads me to, what do you think you see in that practice, or what do you think you see out there? You know, I'm always just trying to help people kind of save a few months and a couple $1,000s. Like, that's
yeah.
kind of the goal of the podcast.
Yeah.
Like,
great.
Don't bark up that tree,
yeah.
you know, don't, you know, so what, you know, what are people doing well? What are the mistakes that you see? And what are the things where you're like, huh,
yeah.
nice job. And you don't have to name brands, obviously, but just, you know, what are the common denominators almost?
I think people who really understand their audience and have oriented their business to be audience centric or,
mm-hmm.
you know, community centric, are successful. I see so many brands that just have no idea who their customer is. And that means that they can't matter to their customer.
Right.
And
how would you say, like, are there tools that you think are pretty easy to kind of use? You know, for us, it's almost unfair because we know who our customer is so well because
yeah.
we're literally interacting with them all day and
right.
every night. But how would you suggest to a brand to really try to figure out who that customer is?
Yeah. Interact with them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
send your product to them, ask for feedback.
Yeah. People are scared to ask for feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, so many founders are, are passion driven. Like they've created their product because they were motivated to do so. They personally saw the need for it in the market, but then they're sort of disconnected mm-hmm. from the rest of the user base.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that isolation really hurts them.
It's interesting because I don't know if I've talked about this on this show before, but when I first opened Havens, that whole cafe area was a shop because I wanted a place that had like really pretty tabletop yeah. and good candles and good olive oil. And like, I wanted it to be like super curated for, and basically what happened was like about a year and a half in, you know, I had my team and I kind of came to the conclusion that that just simply wasn't the way that people were using the space. Mm. They came after work. They weren't coming to buy mustard. They certainly weren't buying plates after they took a class. But meanwhile, people who were coming in for coffee in the morning kept saying, can you just make lunch? Yeah. We would come back. Can you just make soup? We'll have some soup, maybe a sandwich. And so it was kind of hard. Yeah. I mean, it was like physically painful for yeah. me to like take down the shelves and stop stocking all the beautiful things yeah. that I loved. And it made it really beautiful, but it just, I was worried that I was losing the whole, like the soul of it by mm-hmm. listening too much to what people wanted. Yeah. So there's this like,
there's a line there.
Yeah. I think of it like a sailboat, you know, you let it out too far mm-hmm. and you kind of like your sail's like lufting in the yeah. wind, you bring it in too tight and you tip over. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you've got to listen, you've got to have your founder like fire, mm-hmm. but also just make sure that you're listening to the people that are actually using it.
Totally. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, there's a quote, I think it was Jeff Bezos. I'm not sure, but someone much more wise and successful than I am said that your brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room.
Uh-huh.
And I love that because it's like, I think we sometimes go really hard and develop who we are in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And there has to be this balance of, yeah, putting it out there a little bit, really being receptive and yep. listening to how it's being received.
Yeah.
And then sort of molding and crafting the next iteration
yeah.
with that.
No, even, I mean, we've just noticed that one of the things that we've had a little bit of struggle with is like the sauce can be used as a marinade, as a salad dressing, as a condiment, as a, you know, cooking, like you can use it for 85,000 things. At the end of the day, people just want to know one.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were sort of like, and you can use it as an ingredient and da-da-da-da-da. And at the end of the day, people just want to know that you can squeeze it on your chicken and it's good. Mm-hmm. And so all of our social, all of our sort of anything marketing related, we're now backing off of the complicated ways that it makes your life easier
yeah.
and just going into the easy ways yeah. that it makes your life easier.
But that's the beauty of social media is yeah. that you can have a very clear, focused messaging, you know, in the hierarchy of that. Mm-hmm. But then if for those who want to go deeper,
yeah, it's there.
They can find right. it through what other people are saying.
So is the stuff that you think people are doing well basically just the opposite of the stuff that you don't think they're doing well? Like what they're not doing well is that they're in a vacuum and it's pretty and it tastes good, but they're not really...
Right.
There seems to be a disconnect.
Yeah. I think with food specifically, there's still a lot of health, like benefits and attributes and health components being marketed as the brand.
Yeah.
And it's like healthy is no longer a dietary trend.
Yep.
It's a dietary standard.
Yep.
Like everybody in America wants to eat better.
Yeah.
So to say that you're free of GMOs, you're free of gluten,
right.
and you have all natural ingredients, like
that's
duh,
table that, stakes.
Like yeah. you as you should.
Yeah.
And what else?
Yeah.
So it's the what else that at least in food, people yeah. are really slow to identify.
Are there any brands that you think are doing it really, really well?
You know, I mean, I think the first one that immediately comes to mind is Recess, which is a
yep, CBD.
CBD sparkling water, hemp adaptogen sparkling water.
Right, yeah, right.
Hemp extract, yes.
yes.
Little asterisk there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've really created a brand around recess as a moment.
Yep.
And recess is an understanding in today's cultural landscape.
Yep.
As like something that we need because yeah. we're all so anxious and stressed.
Yeah.
And so I think immediately their target feels like they get them.
Yep.
And then you feel this deeper emotional connection.
Yep.
And so it's so much more than just satisfying thirst
right.
or even giving you like a chill buzz or
yeah.
whatever effect it has. It's like you're having a real emotional
yep.
connection and a sense of belonging with something. And so I think that's quite a feat.
And then you took that and more, I mean, I think I told you when I got your deck for Pop-Up Grocer, I had this like, I had an emotional response because it's the best deck. I've told you this 17 times, like I've ever seen. I don't know why it was so awesome.
I don't know why either.
It was just kind of like, first of all, it was so simple and the font was simple and it was like, here's the problem. You're a brand. You're like emerging. The only way that people see you is like in this sea of, you know, the shelf at the grocery store or at Expo West. And like normal people aren't going
right,
to Expo
yeah.
West. So you can either put like the money towards this and like be on the shelf for a week or a month or whatever
right.
it is, or you can pay an influencer the same amount and get like three posts.
Right.
I mean, it was just like, duh. I mean, it was great. And like the images were great and the logo's great. So, I mean, you're really creating your own brand around this, like, you know, keeper of brands.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. Yeah. The master CPG curator.
Right. I mean, it's great.
Did
you know you wanted to, when did you know you wanted to do that?
Oh, never. like everything in my career, it sort
right.
of happened accidentally. No, I mean, I've been ruminating on grocery as one does
yes.
for
yes, as one does.
5 years now. And knowing that there was something missing for me as a consumer in the landscape,
mm-hmm.
I would travel internationally and be so mesmerized by the grocery stores there.
Yeah.
And just felt like I live in the greatest city in the world, quote unquote, and I'm not being satisfied as far as the discovery space.
Yep.
But then I just, you know, I couldn't wrap my head around the amount of capital that would be required to build
an actual grocery store.
And I don't
yeah.
come from money. I don't know
yeah.
people with money.
And
so
also
I just
you can't
like,
have one. I mean, it just, it's one of those things. It just doesn't work as a one-off. You just can't make any money doing it because
yeah.
the margins are so crappy.
Yeah, right. And then once I started looking into the business model
right.
and how broken the system is, I just was like, is this even worth
yeah.
it? Could I even be successful at this?
Right.
So then on my birthday last year, I was invited to this pop-up shop that was a lifestyle pop-up shop. It was
not
a
Passover.
No.
Mom, if you're listening,
no,
that
right.
was for you.
I should have said it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was driven by an apparel brand, but then they had mm-hmm. a bunch of home brands and food brands that participated, and overall the concept just communicated an aspirational lifestyle that I wanted to be a part of.
Right.
And, I was like, why doesn't this exist
yeah.
for food?
Yeah.
And so a little light bulb went off, and then I hit the ground running.
It's awesome. Okay, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk all about what makes products special, tell us more about Pop-Up Grocer, and what is getting boring on the landscape.
This episode is brought to you by Cart Driver, Denver's home for wood-fired pizzas, fresh oysters, seasonal market plates, cocktails, and conversation. Tucked in a 640-square-foot shipping container space in the heart of Denver's Rhino neighborhood, Cart Driver is the perfect place to stop in for an Italian-style spritz, Prosecco on tap, and a wide variety of tinned fish. Open for lunch, dinner, community hour, and late nights 7 days a week, Cart Driver is here for you with fresh, domestically sourced ingredients, and above all, hospitality. Learn more at cart-driver.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Dana Cowan, and I'm the host of Speaking Broadly here on HRN.
Every week, I conduct intimate interviews with the brilliant, powerful women in the food world. We discuss their lives, their careers, and the ways in which they navigate the world at large. You can find Speaking Broadly wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm back with Emily Schilt from Pop-Up Grocer. I just got a text from my mom that she is listening, which is awesome. Hi, Mom.
Hey, Mom.
Yes, it is sort of like the Passover Pop-Up Grocer, except it's not Passover related. So how did you get it started? I mean, you had, how many brands were, tell me about the first one.
Yeah.
Tell me about the second one.
So I had the idea in September of last year, mm-hmm. And I knew nothing about retail. I've right. never worked in retail. I didn't know how to operate a POS.
Right.
So I was like, all right, I got to do like a low risk test
yes.
here. So I put together a home concept pop-up shop within the Hoxton Hotel in Williamsburg
okay.
And ran that over the holidays.
Oh, great.
And
okay.
learned everything
right.
And learned whether I could even possibly do what I had envisioned for the grocery version.
Right.
And then... once I checked those boxes and learned from some mistakes,
right?
Then yeah, I hit the ground running as far as putting that deck together and pitching, you know, initially clients and getting them on board and referrals from clients.
Right.
And then after that, yeah, just hitting up a ton of,
I mean,
clients.
I was getting emails. Can you get me in? Can you get me in? You know, you, it doesn't sound like you had a lot of pitching that you needed to do.
It was pretty, yeah. I mean, once I sent the deck, I think the deck definitely did a lot of the lifting for
yeah.
me. And so, yeah, it was a right. largely positive response.
And for us, I mean, for the brands, you know, it's just such a win-win-win because, you know, yes, it's, we have to get the products to you. There's no distribution involved, but again, you know, and we're getting, I think we get what percent, 80% of
yeah,
the
sale?
Yeah,
80% of the sales on your product.
And then we pay like a basic slotting fee,
right.
which essentially we'd be paying anyway.
Right.
So, but it's all curated, it's all in one spot, and you've done sort of all of the legwork to get the press and the influencers
right.
there.
Right.
And so what was the sort of... Obviously, it was successful because you're doing it again, and you're doing four in 2020. So that
yeah.
sounds like it went well. But what do you think the biggest takeaways were from the experience, both from what you learned about brands and also what you learned about just doing, you know, operating a POS and gathering inventory and dealing with perishables?
Yeah. But on the positive side, I learned that this hunch I had was needed on both sides. Like consumers were really wanting this discovery space that I wanted
yep.
and brands really were in need of the exposure and visibility at low cost.
Yep.
So that was great and that was worthwhile enough. I also learned that it is a logistically difficult
yes.
business and it's a lot to iron out and accomplish to then close 10 days later.
Yes.
I mean, we're essentially building a fully operable grocery store
for
and
10
then
days.
Shutting it down,
yeah.
which is,
yeah.
people would come in and be like, wait, where does all the furniture go?
I know.
And
That's
they
crazy.
Couldn't believe that it was temporary either. Cause it otherwise looks like a beautiful
for sure.
permanent space. So we are trying 30 days,
right.
For our September shop to see how that, duration goes. Also just to understand how then we could have repeat purchasers
mm-hmm.
and how the space might be used differently, whereas in 10 days it's a little bit more like a museum experience
yeah.
than coming for your weekly groceries,
yes.
which I think we'll then see a lot more of in a month's
right.
time. But
yeah, it was. It felt like a museum experience. It felt like an art gallery.
Yeah.
you know, that you could buy and eat from. It
yeah.
really did. It was like an experiential art
yeah.
exhibit, which was very fun.
Yeah.
You know?
And it'll be a little bit more experiential in September also because we are going to integrate sampling.
Right.
I couldn't figure out how to sample 120 brands in
yeah.
10 days, but I think I can do 150 in 30.
Yeah. That's
put a solid
pretty good, by the
spreadsheet
way. Yeah.
together. Yeah.
Lots of Excel.
Yeah.
And then in terms of who thrived there and who didn't, what were the big takeaways for the brands? It's funny because like I'm happy we were invited back. I assume that means we did well.
Yeah.
We never really even talked about it, you know?
Yeah, no, you did well. Yeah. I mean, you did. I think the brands that did well, I mean, you have to define well,
right?
But I'd say the brands that were the most buzzed about, like over social media or just word of mouth among those who came, were really new concepts. Yeah.
Well, the Szechuan chili crisp, I bet, was a winner.
Or like internet sensations that people were coming to the store to specifically see. For, like the chili crisp.
Yeah, that chili crisp.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I had never heard of it. And of course, Maddie was like, we've got to get this. And, you know, it became a thing.
Yeah. It's a thing in my kitchen now.
Yeah.
I can't be without it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like popped lily seeds, mm-hmm. you know, people are like, what is this?
Right.
And can I get this anywhere else?
Right.
Gotta put it in my cart, gotta Instagram it, whatever.
Yes, got it.
So yeah. And then I think ones that have been in the press or people have seen other people talking about, like
right.
a Recess or,
right.
You know, those sort of buzzy brands.
What was that green, like elixir drink that I think it's a West Coast
thing?
Oh,
you loved
it. I loved it.
Yeah. I want to say golden. Now
yeah. I'm golden, like,
thread. Golden thread.
Yeah.
Golden thread.
That was delicious.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that or seen it or anything like it. It reminded me of like Vitamina Vegemin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have them back in the September store.
Okay, good.
So I think I personally
helped them with that. They can thank me.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you were advising, so first of all, the brands that didn't quite stand out, are you going back to them and helping them figure out why? Or do you think could you point to a common theme in those ones? Like, was it just a function of packaging or?
Usually it is a function of packaging.
Right.
Yeah. And it's fascinating to me that that's something that's overlooked.
I know.
Especially just when you go to a mass retailer and you stand in any aisle and you immediately understand why it's so important.
Like, yeah.
How does anyone stand out in this crowded sea of product?
Really crowded.
But yeah, so usually it is packaging. I think there's so many factors, but in our environment specifically, it could be that, like, if you're a protein powder, like, people just aren't in the mindset. Like, they still see you and they still
right.
register that you're something to pay attention to. But as far as actually, like,
you're
capturing
not like
content
a crunchy
around
popcorn
you,
thing that you want to eat right there.
Right. Or, or grab and go and, and eat it immediately. Something that they feel that they could only get at pop-up grocer, then that might not be. So it's a complex conversation,
right?
But more times than not, it is about packaging.
So if you are one of the people that listen to this, which I'm gathering are mostly sort of founders and future founders, don't skimp on package. It's funny because I go back and forth, right? Like I met someone who spent, and I kid you not, $250,000 on their branding and they hadn't done like a full IP search. I mean, that's a nightmare. Like you can't only have good packaging and not have all of the back stuff taken care of. On the other hand, you kind of have to go out there with at least like the beginnings of something. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, like ours is still, there will be iterations and it will evolve, but you kind of have to go out there with like at least your best foot forward. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a happy medium. Yeah.
I mean,
you don't have to spend $250,000.
No.
You can spend
a couple thousand.
You can spend a couple thousand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you were advising a brand that's, you know, not going to be able to sort of pay for someone like you to sort of do the whole architecture and really think of the story, would you recommend just sort of sitting down the founder and the team or the founder and a couple of their like favorite customers, and what questions would you have them ask of themselves to kind of craft that brand identity?
Yeah, I mean, I run workshops often, and there are a couple exercises that I love. One that's really helpful to getting to your why is writing a newspaper headline that you would want written about your brand 5 years from, or 1 year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Yeah,
I think that really helps establish like the bigger picture objective beyond just making it work and selling some jars of peanut butter.
For the Chobani incubator, we had to, for the application, I had to write the headline. Mm. Mine was, "You've unsubscribed from Blue Apron, now what?" Thank you.
That is that. I love that. Thanks, actually. Someone was good in grade school too, I think.
I didn't want to be like, this sauce makes your dinner better. You know, like it was sort of like more of the why. Like I know I want to cook. I tried this thing, 90% unsubscribe within 6 months, but it's like an $8 billion market.
Yeah.
Where are they going? Mm-hmm. You know, are they going back to takeout? Mm. Are they going back to, you know, how are they eating dinner? You know?
Right.
Okay. So that's one exercise. The newspaper headline. Is there another one?
Yeah. As far as a brand personality, so that you have some character and distinct tone of voice, I love the party exercise.
What is
so
that?
So, like, if your brand walked into a party, like, what is the party like?
Oh, my gosh, I love that.
Who do you talk to? How do people talk about you after you've left?
Right.
What are you wearing?
Right.
What kind of jokes are you making?
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing. What if you're, like, the one who's, like... I was just going to say, like, drunk and falling all over,
then
you know.
That's your sense of, you've got a direction for your sense of humor.
That's your brand.
Yeah.
That's such a good one. I'm going to do that with my team just for fun. I think we all have an idea.
Yeah.
Like,
I think these exercises are good too, because it does separate the brand from the founder, which with really small companies can be very difficult in the beginning. You have to see beyond.
It's not me walking into a party.
Yeah. Or it could be. And that's a decision that I think that's a strategic decision you have to make. How much of this brand is me, and how much of it is outside of me.
So what are some common threads that you're seeing? Because I would imagine you have how many slots at Pop-Up?
So the September store will be just over 150.
And brands. How many applications did you get, or brands that reached out?
Tons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So were you like, oh my gosh, another fill in the blank?
I can't believe people are still making granola.
Yeah.
But they are. And we have a few amazing brands on shelf, like one with grass-fed butter and grain-free. Like, you know, there are people doing innovative, interesting things. But every time I see, it just feels, it's so crowded and so oversaturated. Yeah. I wish them lots of luck.
And what are the theme, like, what are the things that you feel like are common threads? Like, I like the fact that you said that sort of the nons are table stakes at this point. Like, gluten-free is not going to be what's going to distinguish you from anything else, or, you know, organic or any of those things. So are you seeing things that are, you know, for me, like, one of the things I think is very clear is that people are leaning into bold flavors. Mm-hmm. Like, they like flavor.
Yeah.
And people are getting more, like, kind of ready to taste them. And I think the zeitgeist is very global. And so I feel like that's a good theme. Like, I can see globally inspired granola being, I'm sure that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have anything like that, that you're sort of like, oh, it's like writing a term paper. This keeps coming up.
Yeah, no, I definitely see the trends. The global or the bold flavors is interesting, because, like I said, like, the chili crisp was really surprising to me. But I think it speaks to our consumer, which, you know, is my age, maybe slightly younger, slightly older, but, like, someone who has grown up on sushi and grown up on quote-unquote ethnic flavors.
Right.
But that's really so ingrained into our diets now that it's like, okay, what else? Again, it's that, like, foundational...
Right.
Thing that we're evolving from, you know.
And in terms of, because this, I don't think the question is the same question, although it might be, like, you've seen a lot of granola, but what's getting a little, what do you think has kind of jumped the shark? Like, yet another collagen powder? Or, I mean, like, what, you know, what do you think has just sort of, like, maybe peaked?
Keto products are that's really crowded too. Mm-hmm. And I do ask myself, like, just like Atkins and, you know, paleo is not on its way out
right
yet by any means.
No, but, load
you know,
food
it's a,
mop.
Is it's a diet. Right, it's a dietary yeah. trend. Yep. Like to build your whole business around something that's fleeting is very risky.
Right. So if you were launching a brand, a food brand today, what would be sort of the first three things that you would do? Mm. Let's say you have your product.
Well, make sure your product tastes good.
Yeah, that's a good. Like that is a good one. A lot of people forget that.
Yeah. And make sure that not just you thinks that it tastes right. good, or your mom, or your roommate.
Right.
And then make sure that there's room for you yeah. in the market.
I know. It's funny, too. We talk about that a lot in here, too, because there technically really isn't much room for any of us, right? It's a very saturated market right now, and it's pretty easy to get into the market, you know? But I think one of the things that people, I say it a lot on the show, but category, category, category. Like, study those grocery market shelves. Like, when we're talking about room for you, we don't mean how many people eat fill in the blank.
Right.
And if you get some percent of that market share, we're talking about like actual physical space.
Right.
Who is the buyer that is buying your thing? Where does it go in the store? And is there any actual physical space right. where yours can replace a couple of things right. that are there? Right. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And in terms of, sort of like going back to pop-up grocer, I think one of the reasons why I liked the deck so much was also you said like offline is the new offline or something. Like there was just something like people are getting a little tired
yeah.
of like only digitally native.
Yeah.
Right. And I think a lot of people are starting, brands are starting to realize they actually have to invest a little bit in stores. Mm-hmm. I think venture people are starting to realize that you have to be omnichannel, right? right? Meaning for those out there that don't like jargon, you can't just be shop up to buy, you know, swipe up to buy on Instagram or only on Amazon or only in grocery stores. You kind of have to be all of them. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that? What's your take on sort of like the general zeitgeist of how brands are navigating digital and grocery? Like we were talking about it before, you know, it's expensive, all of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like to use the word hate. I really don't like the word omnichannel.
Yeah.
I just don't even know what it means in 2019.
Yeah. It's just a channel.
Also, like, you have to be where your customer is. Right. That's what's important.
Yeah.
So, like, know who your customer is, know how they, their journey to you, and where you can meet them along that journey and provide value. Like, that's your goal, not just let's be everywhere.
Right.
Spray and pray.
Right. Yeah. And then is there a formal selection process like that you have? And let's talk a little bit so that people who are listening can just inundate you with emails.
Yeah.
Tell us how to reach you. Tell us where you're going to be. I know that we're coming back to New York in a couple weeks.
Yes.
And then I am assuming you are reviewing products for 2020. Where are those pop-up's going to be?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we have essentially three filters. The first of which, is it interesting? Is it new? Mm-hmm. Will people be excited by it? Then the second is, does it meet our nutritional standards?
Right.
And then the third, will it look good on shelf?
Right.
Will it be contributive to our overall aesthetic and vibe?
Right.
And we are opening in New York in the Soho area September 20th, and we'll be open for 1 month through October 20th.
And if people want to find it, just go to @popupgrocer Instagram.
Yeah, we won't put the exact address up until very close to the date. Otherwise, people will go to a vacant store. We wouldn't want to do that to you.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's happening in September. And then next year, we're going to LA in February.
Cool.
And are more than halfway locked and loaded for that one.
Cool.
And then looking at Austin, Denver, mm-hmm. and back to New York to round out 2020.
Why did you choose Austin and Denver?
they're key markets for our brands. So our hope is that we can really take a traveling showcase across the country and help introduce them to those key markets across the country. Yeah,
that's so cool.
So, but plus they're also their food-centric cities
right.
that have a little bit more of a grocery desert yes. situation too, or yep. at least like a curated, narrowed selection grocery store. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And so can you just tell me before we go, two things. One is, did your deck just come to you or like, did you work really hard on it?
I love how much you love my deck.
I really love your
really
deck.
Really just bolted
like I work
confidence.
On my deck every day. It's been like ever, all I do is work on my deck.
Yeah. I think the argument, like the problem identification was easy for me because I work with small food brands. So
right.
I know their challenges.
Yep.
And also as a consumer, I knew what I wanted. So I,
right.
So yeah, the argument, the framework of it, yeah, was fairly.
And then the logo.
I hired a designer who's a friend, also a friend of mine, someone that I trust. I mean, I've been so lucky. Like,
yeah.
I'm my only full-time staff member currently. I have an army of freelancers, and they've
right.
all been amazing contributors.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also would have been lost for finding them if I weren't sort of ingrained in
right.
this world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone who's thinking about copying, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little
right.
word to
yeah.
the wise
secret,
people.
You're missing the secret
sauce. Okay. So people can find you on Pop-Up Grocer on Instagram.
Yes.
Can people DM you if they want to send you samples or things like that? Or is
sure.
there a better way to reach you?
Yeah. DM on Instagram. That's great. We can also, if you go to our website, which is popupgrocer.co, there's a submission form there, and
awesome.
We read each of those.
Awesome.
So.
And then the last question, what's the most fun you've had? Like, do you remember a moment? Was it when it opened? Was it seeing a brand that you've helped? Like, just one moment where you were like, oh, I love what I do.
I think coming into the physical space in the morning
yeah.
and just being, and realizing that I had created it
yeah.
like it was an idea that I had and now it was real and it was tangible like
yeah.
I work in digital marketing for
yep.
the most part, and so it's not that often that I really get to touch and feel and be surrounded by something that I made.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
Yeah.
It was pretty surreal.
Were you really
yeah.
sad when it closed?
I was so, oh my god, I was crying. I mean, I
yeah.
cry a lot, but I was
it's
crying.
Like post-party depression.
Yeah,
yeah,
just like, wait, all of that and now it's over. It was a bit of a high too.
Yeah, but you get to have the high instead of the drudgery of like continued operating through February.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I also, you know, I work behind a computer most of the time.
Yeah.
So being able to interact with people in the community, we had
yeah.
regulars like touch babies, pet
yeah.
dogs. It
I
was
know.
So satisfying and rewarding.
Yeah. I still feel that way every day I walk into Havens.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Having that
day.
Physical space is so special.
Yep. Agreed. Emily, thank you so
thank
much
you
for coming.
For having
me. I'm just so into what you're doing. And from the get-go, I was like, yes, I love this, you know. And so it's only getting better and you're awesome.
Cool. Your support means everything. So
well,
thank you.
Thank you for having us. I mean, it's getting a little competitive, so I'm glad that we made the cut. Okay, everyone. This was the last episode of the summer season, but I will be back in the fall. I have already a really fun lineup of people coming. I will say thank you. Those of you who have DM'd me and emailed, because sometimes I'll say like, I don't know who you are, but thank you for listening. If there's anything you want me to talk about, or yeah, that'd be great. So a bunch of you actually have, and you've told me who you are and why you're listening. And I'm glad to hear that this has been helpful for you. It would be helpful if you wanted to leave a review or some sort of star on iTunes. That way other people who are sort of in the same place that we are, as we're trying to build these things and build them smart and hopefully without, you know, losing our sanity or our life savings, can also benefit from all the amazing guests that I have on. So thank you for listening to In the Sauce. Jeet, thank you so much for being the great engineer that you are. And I'll be back in September.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food Radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without the support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.